Hey, y'all, I got a question for you. What's a piece of gear that you maybe have unintentionally overlooked in your rig throughout the years? Well, for me, it's always been guitar cables. I figured, it just goes from the guitar to the amplifier or the guitar to the pedal board to the amp, and if one breaks, whatever, I'll just go buy another one. No big deal. Thanks to the fine folks at Runway Audio, though, I have finally seen the light. Runway Audio is based in Nashville, Tennessee, which is awesome for me because that's right down the road. But it's awesome for you as well because Runway has the best cable on the market. And what makes it the best, you ask? Well, it has the lowest capacitance of any cable on the market right now, at 20 picofarads per foot. And pretty much all that capacitance is the ability to store an electrical charge. The lower the capacitance is, the less tone that it sucks from your cable from your guitar on the way to your amplifier. So if you're in the market for anything cable-related, whether it's instrument cables, patch cables, XLR cables, speaker cables, power cables, you name it, Runway Audio has got you covered. And if you go down to my link tree, click the link for Runway Audio, any purchasing you will do, I will get a little bit of a kickback from that, which is always appreciated. So check out all the awesome stuff that Runway Audio is doing and pick something up to get the best tone possible. This episode today is brought to you by Stringjoy Guitar Strings, the finest strings on the market. For me, it has been the Orbiters that have been my absolute go-to ever since they have come out, and that's their coated electric strings. But if the coated thing's not your thing, totally get it. The Signatures and the Broadways in their electric line, top-notch quality. For acoustic guitars, they have their Naturals and their Brights, along with the Foxwoods, which are their coated Fosper Bronze. For all you bassists out there, too, they have the Signatures and the Rangers. Full disclosure, the link down below is my affiliate link, so if you would like to check out Stringjoy, click that link down below. Not only will you be getting the finest guitar strings on the market, but you'll also be helping out this podcast, which I greatly appreciate. So, head on over to Stringjoy today. I'm not even close to the tip of the iceberg of all the awesome things that Stringjoy does, so click the link down below and check them out for yourself. Welcome back to Man the Helm Podcast, this time with no click track in the beginning of it. So, Mike and I are back. What's up, dude? How you doing?
I'm doing good. That was pretty enjoyable to watch.
Yeah, like I said, we were talking about DAWs a little bit ago and how, you know, I could buy Logic and it wouldn't be that much better, but apparently I don't even know how to do GarageBand, so here we are. So we just did something fun with some capos.
Something stupid fun.
Stupid fun.
Best kind of fun.
Dumb comments on the internet, man. If you guys, once again, shameless plug, if you don't follow Man the Helm, anywhere you have social media, check out Man the Helm. Just type it in. You'll see the logo and you'll see all the dumb stuff that I'm putting up, as well as Mike now is putting up because, you know, gave me a little bit of modeling with his 8-string last time we put some stuff up. But that video itself with the drop tune and whatnot, you know, got one of those fun comments of, well, you can't hear those sludgy notes anyway. So, how did we mitigate that, Mike?
Two capos.
Two capos on an 8-string.
On the 8th fret.
8th fret. Yep, because we had to have it in C, right? Because that's what the quote-unquote brutal standard is for, you know, guitars is drop C.
Well, it was standard C. Standard C.
Is that more brutal?
I guess so.
I think it is.
It's kind of hot.
It's hot. Everybody likes a standard C. Well, maybe not everybody. Anyway, I'm about to go on vacation, man. I'm going to go down to Gatlinburg and, you know, hang out with the family. So we had to get not as well prepared. I guess we're not really ever really prepared. Just kind of talk about dumb shit.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the... I'm pretty sure that's in the subtitle underneath the episode.
Well, the explicit title and dumb shit. Explicit followed by dumb shit. I will say, though, people have really liked that I've gotten, and you've gotten comments, too. It's super nice having a co-host.
Well, you know, yeah, I bring the flavor to the meal. Yeah, you know?
you're the salt and pepper, right?
No, I'm you know, give me a little bit of help. I'm a little bit of garlic powder, onion powder.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you can do the salt and pepper thing.
Okay, I'll do the salt and pepper thing. I mean, but never mind. We're gonna deviate swiftly. We've already deviated twice, man. This is a new record. We're not even like 5 minutes into this fucking thing.
That's how you do it.
I know. So, let's talk about 8-strings because I've had yours now for about a week. I don't know what to do on it.
Yeah, and when I first got it, or when I was gonna go get it, I was thinking to myself, you know, is this a necessary purchase? Is this something that I definitively wanted to get? Because I had to trade a pretty, at least in my mind, pretty above standard guitar.
Sure.
And it was the guitar that I got while I was in Kuwait. It was a guitar that I did all the stuff with one of my buddies. So it had more sentimental value than it did actual value.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I hate that I had to get rid of it. But at the same time, I know that the guy that was getting it was very excited to get it.
Yeah.
So I knew it was going to someone that was going to take care of it. He already had like an idea of what he wanted to do with it. So that's awesome. And I hope, you know, nothing but for the best for him. I know he's playing down in Nashville. I think he was doing a couple weddings recently. So hopefully it's got its own little love going on right now.
Well, I'm sorry, just to make sure, that was what Epiphone Les Paul Standard?
Modern.
Modern. Okay, that's what I thought. I couldn't remember if it's a standard or modern.
Yeah, but. And I'm not going to lie. The moderns are pretty sweet for the price.
Oh, absolutely.
And I got mine 50% off of normal stock because it had a broken toggle switch.
Oh, dude.
That's still, I mean, there's plenty enough toggle to toggle between pickups. Right.
Yeah.
So it was just like, I was like literally getting this guitar for $300 that was $600.
Yeah.
I think it still is $600. But anyways, but I wanted to get something that I could play the music of, well, the music that I've been enjoying over the last at least 2 years. Mm-hmm. You know, like one of my neighbors randomly was like, hey, you ever heard of this band? No. Listen to it. And I was like, I need to learn some stuff by them. Well, when you don't have an 8-string, you can't, you can kind of play 8-string stuff. But not really.
You can only really get down so low on a standard scale length guitar, like a Fender or Gibson scale guitar, before stuff starts getting kind of weird.
Yeah, and the way that you approach certain songs, especially if you're just playing along with them, you have to kind of look at it a little bit differently, because something where you can make it more, you can make it simpler to play, will not sound quite like it was recorded.
Right.
So you kind of have to go through that too, where you're trying to play something that someone has already put down before you, and you can easily follow along. Well, I don't know about easily, but you can follow along.
Right.
And so you have to kind of get into that mindset. Because for me, being a bass player, predominantly, I mean, I only recently, or not recently, but I've dabbled with guitar, but now I've mainly focused on guitar for the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
But I treat it like my 6-string bass.
Right.
I don't really treat it like an 8-string guitar. I treat it more like a bass. I mean, even just a little while ago, I was literally using a pickup to hold on to and plucking down the strings.
Yeah.
So for me, that's more natural to me than it is for someone that has necessarily mainly focused on guitar only.
Well, see, dude, that's the camp I'm in, man, because I have no idea. Like, I know theoretically what will work, but it's the practical application of actually doing it.
Yeah.
That's, like, melting my brain, you know, because I get it. You know, you showed me that one, you know, super old, you know, YouTube short or whatever. I can't remember the guy's name, of where he's playing that Green Day song on an 8-string.
And yeah. K-Mac.
Yeah, K-Mac. Yeah. And, Yeah, that's the typical, like, you get an 8-string, what's the first thing you do? Chugs. Chugs for days.
Yeah.
Right? But, and, yeah, that's awesome. I've done some stuff with that. And but then, you know, I'm sitting watching these other players that use the extended range stuff, you know, for, like, the Tosin Abasis, Tim Henson's, you know, and I'm realizing...
I don't think I've ever seen Tim Henson do extended range.
Well, he had a 7-string at some point, I believe. I could be wrong.
I don't know. Anyways, continue on your point.
Well, regardless, let's just stick with Tosin Abasi then. Definitely an extended range player.
Definitely.
So, seeing, and he's like the extreme example. He's taking the instrument to a completely different level. He's gotten to the point where he's mastered it to the point of taking it up another standard of playing. You know, coming up with new techniques, which is extremely hard to do, especially in this day and age. You know what I mean? And watching how he approaches it is what it's like, okay, now I have to digest a whole different-ish genre to understand how to utilize this instrument.
Right. Well, I think, you know, I think that regardless of how many strings there are, there's always going to be players that are going to be pushing that kind of mold of what is possible on an instrument. And, you know, even though you have, like, you know, Tosin playing 8-strings, you know, watching, I'm not even going to try to butcher his name, like Randy Elfman, Danny Elfman. I was such an idiot. I was thinking of Randy Newman and Danny Elfman.
Yeah, they had a baby.
I put them together. They're Randy Elfman now. Anyways, but you have, this idea that extended range is new.
No.
Is silly because you can still find 10-string classical guitars that were made in the 20s and 30s.
Right.
There's lutes, the Baroque lutes. There's all kinds of instruments that use the strings, not necessarily how they're being used today, because now they're being used more as writing a riff and instead of being working as sympathetic strings.
Sure.
Like, kind of like how a sitar, you have pretty much two main strings and the rest are sympathetic strings.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks insane, but it's not as insane as, you know, obviously there's going to be players out there that are going to be like, watch this. And it's like, okay, well, never mind. That is pretty insane. But at least for the common music that you will hear with that type of instrument is going to be relatively simple.
Yeah. Well, And I think that's what I'm not trying to say that Tosin is, you know, he's taking something new, but it's his approach to the instrument. You know, it's the hammer-ons from nowhere, the selective picking, that sort of stuff. Like, it's not necessarily like he's reinventing the instrument itself, but it's more of like a way that makes more sense in my mind to play that type of guitar.
Well, I mean, it's like even watching him playing a 6-string.
Oh, it's the same.
It's just
absolutely
brutal what he can do.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no way to put it in words that as far as that very more technical groove based, like math rock, quote unquote, you're going to be hard pressed to find a better player that does that than Tosin.
Yeah, especially, I mean, like his well-roundedness as a player too. You know, he can everything from those extended jazz, you know, crazy suspended chords or anything that he's doing with, like, utilizing that extended range guitar to get different chord voicings of something that would be relatively easy to play, you know, but now that you're adding all these extra notes, it's adding all these dynamic layers, like you were saying, like with those sympathetic
and then
strings.
Put the tempo at like 180 or 200.
Yeah. And then doing Victor Wooten style, you know, slaps and plucks and hybrid picking. And
a lot of times, like, as far as a player, like comparatively for a bass player, I always think of them kind of leaning more towards that, like, Jaco Pastorius vibe.
For sure.
Where you have a dedicated rhythm, but a melody on top playing at the same time and just jumping in between the two to make a full song. I mean, It's incredible.
Yeah. Like, well, and same thing as before, though. I mean, that's not really anything new either because, you know, you've had guys that, you know, those Delta Blues slice players guys that'll keep that rhythm.
Django Reinhardt doing it with two fingers.
Exactly. But, yeah, and I think part of that is, too, because we also live in an age of information where we can get anything at our fingertips. So it might seem like people are pushing the boundaries, which I'm not saying they're not, but they're still standing on those, you know, quote unquote shoulders of giants still, because they're utilizing techniques that people have done and they're just kind of perfecting it and putting their own spin on it.
Well, I mean, a lot of that playing goes back to classical playing. Exactly. Anyways. Yeah. It's going back to like your harmonic minor scale, or you're doing dyads and triads, and you're doing tritones and semitones, and you're doing all kinds of different techniques. And it's like, the just because the genre changes doesn't mean the techniques don't change.
No, yeah, and that's
it's just the utilization of those techniques and the way that you're composing pieces. I mean, because even like listening to new classical that is being written,
mm-hmm.
It's insane what people are coming up with, not just for guitar, but piano as well. Like, the classical composers of today are really bringing it.
Yeah.
Where as far as, you know, I enjoyed classical music as pretty much as the next person.
Minimal.
It wasn't anything I was too crazy about. I mean, I was more interested in Trans-Siberian Orchestra doing their compositions of those classical pieces and anything by a classical composer. But now, and especially getting more into that style of music, and of course I've always been fascinated with flamenco, but it's truly crazy. Kind of like things are kind of going full circle where you're having a mixture of, oh, we're going to do pop and metalcore, or we're going to do rock with like a little bit of jazz in it. And you kind of have a mix of genres. And that's why, like, you know, there's probably, if there's like 12, 13 main genres, there's like thousands of subgenres.
Oh, easy.
Thousand subgenres of that. So.
Yeah, because I listened to them before they were cool.
I was one of their first 100 listeners.
Yeah.
I was subscribed on YouTube, subscriber number 7.
Well, it still blows me away, though, with everything that you said. Like I said, I agree. Everything's kind of being mixed and melded and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, and it's still just, I know it shouldn't probably blow me away still, but just knowing that in Western music, which is most of the music that I consume, is only 12 notes, and that you can take 12 notes and have this infinite amount of variables, which you shouldn't be able to, right? You have a fixed number. You shouldn't be able to have an infinite amount of variables with those that specific number.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, it's like any division, subdivision of any type of rhythm is going to change radically.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was listening to a Rocky rap this morning.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like...
Is that?
Not quite.
I'm just kidding.
But, you know, it just listening to music around the world makes you realize, like, you know, any type of that kind of like, it's the only way I can describe it is Middle Eastern trap beat.
Okay. Yeah.
Like, it might as well be Travis Scott in the Middle East, because that, I mean, that's what it sounded like. You know, obviously I don't know what words they're saying, because I don't speak their language, which is fine. I mean, it's like I'm watching a docuseries on Netflix and I'm literally having to read either what subtitles they put in, or, and if they don't put subtitles, I have to use my phone to figure out what they're talking about.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, it's implied, but it's always nice to know what they're talking about.
Sure, sure, sure.
But it's like anything, like any type of a Rocky rap or like K-pop. Or,
dude, I thought you said Rocky rap.
No,
my bad.
Rocky.
Rocky. Wow. Okay, Now I get why I sounded like a complete idiot just now.
Well, we're going to have to deviate back to what we were talking about. Got to throw another deviation. But we're listening to music coming out of Sudan or South Africa or Nigeria.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, and I've heard tons of music from like Venezuela and Brazil. And it's fantastic music. I mean, I've even heard banda music from Mexico.
Yeah.
You know, nothing like some cartel rap music for you. At least they had live action gunshots in it. That was awesome. But, you know, to summarize, it really is, there's always going to be something out there for everyone. But there's also stuff that you may not know that may actually be the thing that ends up being your favorite thing.
Yeah, 100%. That's why, like, especially teaching, man. Like, I have a bunch of kids, and I get it when you're young. You're impressionable to a certain point, but especially when you hit that, like, middle teenage years, that, like, you know, 15, 16, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
You like what you like, and no one can tell you any different, you know? And that's the one thing, and unfortunately, I have run across a few people that are my age in their early 30s that are still like, oh, no, I don't listen to anything outside of them. I'm like, dude, you're selling yourself short. I'm not saying you have to love it. I'm not saying you got to eat, sleep, and breathe this shit.
No, it wasn't like I stumbled upon a Rocky Rap pretty much because I just typed in rap music around the world and just clicked on the first or second video that I saw, and the first thing was a Rocky Rap. Like, it wasn't like I woke up today like, wonder if they got any good music in a rock today. Haven't been there in a while. Let me listen to it. Like, no.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the thing. I think we also live... were you the one that told me about that... that app where you could listen to radio stations from around the world?
I mean, I don't know the app name off the top of my head, but I mean, I have heard of it before.
It might not have been you then.
No, it wasn't me.
Okay. No, but that was one of those things. It was like a real, you kind of have like an introspective thing where they would, I forget what they did, but anytime they did like busy work where they just need to take their mind off something, instead of listening to like what they normally would listen to, they would just turn that app on and just pick a random country, you know? And you could get anything from the news to the music to current events to whatever. And it was just kind of like a cool little hour they would spend just getting a different perspective on things.
Well, I mean, there's always going to be someone out there that's doing something a little bit better than you are.
Yeah.
Regardless, I mean, it doesn't matter whether you're a living legend, a past legend, or just starting off. There's always going to be someone that does something that you're interested in a little bit better than you. And there's nothing wrong with that, because you can gain perspective and introspective from that music or that artist that you may not have had yourself. Like, I was watching a video. Is it Tomo Fujita?
I believe I know who you're talking about.
The guitar instructor from Berkeley.
Yeah. Yep.
He'd been teaching there for like, I think 20 years now or something like that. And he put a video up, and I think it's a couple months old, but it was called The Things That I Wish My Students Knew Before They Came to Berkeley.
Yeah.
And he was talking about utilizing your scales, but only using one string.
Yeah.
And then using dyads of different shapes and going up the fretboard instead of doing, you know, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, or 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2. Doing that for scales, going up, moving up the strings instead of just moving up one string. And I was watching it, and I was like, you know, this is not groundbreaking in the information that's being given, but it's groundbreaking because I didn't think to do that.
Well, so there's a phrase that I love from a guy named Jocko Willink. I don't know if you're familiar with him.
I've heard the name, but I don't
know. He used to be a SEAL, and now he's runs a podcast, motivational speaker, runs a business, teaching about leadership.
Oh, and, yeah. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I know you're talking about.
I have his book sitting up right up there. Really good book.
100 Killer Licks and Chops for Blues Guitar.
No, Extreme Ownership. I've read that book now three times. It's really good. But anyway, he always says discipline equals freedom.
Yeah.
So, and that's the way, like when you think about being disciplined, you can think about that in like a broad general term. But the best way to do that is like when you set like goals, you have a overarching thing of what you want to achieve. But then kind of what we're talking about with music, we have these subcategories of how we're going to get to that. Same thing with your discipline, right? You know, like for instance, being a better guitar player, I still do exercises like that where I'm like, okay, I'm going to play the major scale in E on every string. Just up the string.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to go and like, okay, I'm going to play an E minor scale, like you said, in those dyad forms up the string, you know, and I'm not doing it because it's like, I'm trying to be like, okay, yeah. Cause if I play with another guitar player, I'd be like, actually, bro, what you need to do is follow the, whatever, you know what I mean? I'm not trying to do it like that. It's easier once you understand that there's, once again, only those 12 notes that you have to utilize. And there's so many of the notes on the fretboard that just repeat themselves. You can find these patterns. You can find these things. It's not like a piano where everything's laid out. It's a lot easier.
Well, typically if I'm like trying to read with someone or like trying to figure out something that they're playing without necessarily stopping everything to figure it out, a lot of times I'll play dyads or triads to try to hear, okay, I did a D major. Well, does a D major 7 sound a little bit better with it? Does a D minor 7? Does D 6? You know, keep going on and keep going forward. But if you hear the notes that are highlighted in a phrase or a chord or whatever you're listening to, you can quickly identify, okay, this is this chord. So the next chord, unless they're doing something super wacky, you can typically find, like, if it's like D minor 7th, I'm going to look for like an E major or an E6 or something along those lines. I'm going to listen for the major that's coming after that minor. And if it's two minor chords, then I know that if I hit that major, it's going to sound far too bright.
Yeah.
For what's being played.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's not a perfect system.
No.
Because sometimes you can find what I would like to call sympathetic dyads or sympathetic triads.
Sure.
Where you found the right notes, but not the right chord.
Yeah. Not the right voicing of said
chord. Right. Like it's just a different voicing. And when you're running through, it's an easier way, especially like playing blues or jazz. It's easier, especially in not like 12-bar blues, 12-bar blues, like a blues song that's just kind of, you know, has more of an R&B type feel.
Sure, yeah.
Because I'm a big R&B fan. That's like one of my favorite things to do.
Yeah.
Because it has a little bit of blues, a little bit of jazz, and I just love grooves. Anyways, but that's how I'll typically play with a band and kind of figure out where I need to be in that mix, or if I'm being the lead, I need to know kind of where this is, so that way whenever I go and do a lead or do a solo or do, you know, a little flourish or something like that, I know where I'm going at least.
Right.
I have a simple guide to where I need to get to.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. You know, one of the things I literally just was talking to a student last week about this is something as simple as knowing where your octaves are at. If you're playing like a power chord,
it's pretty important.
You know what I mean? Cause no offense to the kid, he's young and impressionable, but he's kind of also getting to that better than beginner phase of playing guitar and, can shred, but doesn't know how to utilize it. You know what I mean? So like he can play like really fast licks that he looked up on, you know, guitartabs or whatever.com,
but just has
no context of how to utilize that. So what I was trying to explain to him, and you know, we were, dude, it's kind of like pulling teeth with him sometimes, It's like something as simple as your octaves, finding the, you know, and I think I saw, what's that YouTuber's name? Rhett Scholl did a good video on that. Just showing super, I think it was just a short actually, just breaking it down, you know, and it's like for a player of his caliber that does all that session work and stuff like that, it's still important. That's why he made the video, to understand how easy it is for you to navigate the fretboard.
Well, knowing your basics, basically, makes you better overall. Because, I mean, it's kind of a jump, but not to get too far off, but I'm going somewhere with it.
You're good.
But in basketball, there was a player named Hakeem Olajuwon.
Okay.
Center for Houston Rockets for like forever. But people found him very dominant in his position and a very insanely great player.
Okay.
Not because he could dunk the ball or he could do a sky hook or he could do any of the other stuff. Everyone always talks about his footwork. And it was because he worked so hard on his footwork to learn the basics of how to get to his spot, how to stay in his spot, how to move out of his spot in such an effective way to make him a very highly efficient player. He did that better than anyone else.
Yeah.
And doesn't matter if you're talking about Shaq or talking about any other great of that era, they all talk about his footwork.
Yeah.
And because he did the basics so well, everything else was super simple for him to nail down, to the point that he was their greatest asset. They won two championships in a row because they had Hakeem. I mean, there were other great players on that team.
Of course.
But knowing his basics made him a great.
Yeah.
And knowing your basics is about the most important thing you can do, because if I have to sit there, if we're working in a session or we have two rehearsals and we're going to a gig because we just kind of threw this band together and let's get it moving. Mm-hmm. I've done it.
Likewise. Know,
everyone's done it at some point, somewhere, somehow. Anyways, but if I have to sit there and explain every single bit of this part to you, then I'm just going to be like, you're gone.
Yeah.
Because if I have to sit there and explain, hey, it's a D minor 7, but like your second inversion, you don't necessarily have to know every single bit of music theory to be a great player, but it helps.
Well, okay. So this is where I'm going to kind of disagree with you just a little bit. Whenever you're talking to most guitar players that I've encountered, they have a decent level of music theory, but it's not going to be something that they can pull out real quick.
Well, what I mean by that, I don't mean you have to know every single bit of it. What I mean is that you have to be able to know the basics of music theory.
I got, yeah.
Pretty well, or at least it's a tool, not you got to know it no matter what. But if I have to sit there and break down every single bit of a part, then you don't need that part because you're not competent. You're not a competent enough player to figure it out.
Yeah. And so like if I was thinking about an inversion, right, I'm going to tell you right now, I couldn't tell you what the second inversion of a D minor 7 would be. That being said, I know how to play a D minor 7 and I know what the core notes of that chord are.
That's I'm saying.
That's all I was saying is that when I've talked to guys about, you know, the basis of music theory is two things for me. The major scale, because that's the basis for most Western music, right?
Right.
And how those intervals between those notes work and how to formulate chords out of those intervals. If you know how to do that, you're going to be like 90% there. Now, that discipline to learn that, yeah, it's a bit of a learning curve. It's not something you're just going to pick up. I mean, you might be one of those freaks of nature that can just absorb information and just regurgitate it back out 100%. There was a quote that I heard the other day, which I loved. Inspiration is for amateurs. Professionals have to work.
Yeah. I mean, and it's not wrong.
Well, and I hate, that's what I've heard from a lot of quote unquote, and I don't mean in their playing, I mean in their mindset of amateur musicians. Well, I just write songs when I feel inspired. Well, cool. What happens when you're not inspired, though? Do you have anything to fall back on?
You buy an 8-string.
You buy an 8-string, and you put capos on it.
And then you get a Digitech drop tune.
And you drop it down a whole octave.
And then you get a whammy, or like the Digitech whammy, and you move that up the octave.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So that way you have a capoed drop tune, pitch shifted up, whammy pedal, and then I put that into my Marshall 100 watt, and I run that to 4 1x8 cabs.
Four?
Well, you got to get all the bass frequencies.
All the bass frequencies.
Yeah, I run my 100 watt Marshall so I can blow all those speakers out of the. And then I create a distortion, so I don't even need a distortion pedal. Distortion pedals are for people that don't know how to create distortion.
Yeah. Yeah,
I just stab my speakers.
Yeah, you just got to rip the shit out of your speakers and you'll be good.
Yeah.
Speaking of ripping shit out of speakers, it was hilarious. One of the guys that he only came for one lesson. He was a bass player. He had one of those small Fender
little rumbles.
No, the guitar amp.
The little, the Frontman?
Yeah, the little 8-inch one.
Oh, that's awesome.
He brought it in and he's like, hey, I brought my amp with me today. I said, oh, cool, man. Like, well, you know, we got amps here. You know, it's a music store. We could have just.
What?
I know, right? So we could have just brought it up there. He's like, oh, no, there's something wrong with my amp. I was like, oh, okay. Dude, this guy, this is what he did. He plugged his bass into that 8-inch Frontman. And he's like, yeah, you know, I was trying to play with some of my friends and I really cranked it up. And I was like, yeah, you probably blew the speaker out.
You blew the coils. Yeah.
He's like, no, this thing's meant for bass. I'm like, listen, man, we can sit here and argue about what's meant for what, but that was not meant to happen. I mean, I guess it was meant to happen, but it shouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
I don't like that phrase, but, you know.
Or just do what I do.
What's that?
So what I do is I go to my local Walmart. I steal all the 6x9s that they have in their car audio section. I then wire them into a milk crate that I cover with a blue tarp that I also stole. And then I go to the electrical department and then I get like, you know, like 24 gauge wire, you know, you want it thin because the bass will fill the wire up better.
What?
Yeah. And then I run that to a 30 watt crate head that's only meant for guitar. And I dime everything, like, you know, that second channel, that dirt channel, all the way up. That's what gives you the most bass. You need the distortion for the bass. I then put it in, you know, drop C sharp, and then I hit all the strings at once to announce my presence to the world that I am alive. And then I have the cops show up, and then that ends that. I don't, you know.
You don't want to announce your presence. You're doing it to assert your dominance, man. That's why we.
Yeah.
That's why we do that.
That's why I wear only a loincloth.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Yeah.
If you don't hold.
But on the headstock.
On the headstock. Yeah.
Yeah.
What if you have a headless guitar though?
Then you put it where the headstock was.
But there's nothing to put it on.
Then you put it in between the strings, and if it starts muting the strings, you just put your capo up one fret higher.
Oh, I honestly can't believe we did that. It was a good idea.
It was a stupid idea, but it was an effective idea.
It's a great idea. We need to go play a gig with the 8-string somewhere and show up with two capos on it.
Two capos and a drop tune.
And I will go procure a whammy so we can put it back up an octave.
Well, I still think we need to do the four whammy idea.
Four wah?
Yeah, the four wah.
Mm-hmm. I'm down.
What wah? Four wah.
Four wah. All the wahs. No, dude. So that's the thing with. So, okay. I understand musicians, for some reason, first world problem, are very opinionated about tools and toys that are made to enhance their playing experience, i.e., amps, pedals, guitars themselves. Okay. Nobody fucking cares what your opinion is on it.
What?
I know. It's groundbreaking.
The way that I pick my musical gear is I go to the YouTube comment section and I just start reading about how much shit that this $5,000 thing is, or $500 or $50 or $5 thing is.
You know, it's a better place when you go to Fiverr and you have somebody that sends you a message about wanting to do a guitar track on their song, and you tell them that, yeah, I have a pedal that emulates a Voxy sort of thing, and he reads that message that says I have a pedal that emulates a Voxy sort of thing and assumes I have a AC30 at my house. And then when he talks about how great it sounds, and I tell him, yeah, man, that pedal's really great, and he gets mad because I didn't use an amp.
Well, I think the most effective thing to do is to let every YouTube comment make your decisions for you.
That's probably the best. Actually, no, I don't want to do that. I want to go deeper with this. YouTube is too safe. I need to go to TikTok and find all of those comments for
gear. I'll just go to 4chan then.
4chan's even better.
We can keep dropping
just,
down.
Let's just keep going. Just yeah. down the yeah. abyss of just shitty comments.
Hey, look. Look at this new thing I just bought. You should kill yourself. Oh, okay.
Thanks. Oh, speaking of which, we need to throw that 8-string in the trash.
Yeah.
Just so you know. So, sorry that you traded a guitar, but that thing needs to go to the trash.
I mean, apparently, if you hit low strings on, you know, an extended range guitar, if you use the extended range of the extended range guitar, you should just go ahead and, you know, get rid of the extended range. So I'm just going to go get a jigsaw and cut the fretboard until I only have 6 strings left.
No, you know what we need to do? We need to get all high E strings, like all nines, and just tune it all up to E.
And then put the drop tune on it.
And then put the drop tune on it. And the 2 capos.
Yeah. and a wah pedal.
Four
wah pedals. Four. Yeah, I'm gonna do my new blues rig. It's called 4 tube screamers and 4 wahs.
So okay, TSW. Yeah, 4 TSW. That's what we're gonna call it. Tube screamer wah, or would it be WTS?
You know what we should do? We should do wah, tube screamer, and flanger, so they can be WTFs.
I'm down. I am so down.
And we're only going to do Van Halen covers.
Are you sure?
With an 8-string and capos.
Okay, good. Okay, yeah, I wanted to make sure we're not going to get anything that would emulate. Like,
well, whenever you do the dive bomb, you just have to open up the capo.
Oh man, this one's talking about freaking just going down to nowhere is what we're doing right now. Deviation to bullshit. It's good though. I'm extremely sleep deprived, so this might be a short episode, to be honest with you.
We could do Panama.
Panama?
Yeah, by Van Halen.
Except we need to call it something else.
Panama City.
There you go. Thank you. I was thinking that. Yeah, Panama City.
We'll call it Panama City.
And it could be the lyrics of Paradise City with Panama guitar and music over it.
Yeah, take me down to Panama City. Where the weed is green and the girls aren't pretty.
Yeah. Well, the weed is debatable.
Oh, it's definitely green.
Yeah.
Is it good? No.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I spent $50 and all I got was hash.
Reminds me of the never mind. I'm gonna stop.
The only thing that's got more seeds and stems is a starter kit from Lowe's.
Oh shit. Okay, so Panama City, 8-string,
2 capos.
2 capos.
A drop tune.
Drop tune. Well, we need the wah.
Oh, no. We need 4 wahs.
Yeah.
4 tube screamers and 4 flanger okay. 4 flanger pedals.
A drop tune and a whammy.
Yeah. And then we'll put that all into a pedal that is emulating an AC30.
Okay.
And then we'll run that into just direct in. Nothing direct else. In. Yeah, direct in.
We're not going to have a load box or anything to...
No. You want it direct in because you want your interface, if it's not screaming and burning up into oblivion, you haven't done your job.
Now, the question is, you're talking about diming amps and diming the pedals and stuff. Are we diming the preamp that we're going into as well?
Of course.
Okay, good. I was just making sure.
So you got to make sure that you get everything at 10, because when it's at 10, it's at its best possible thing that it could ever be. Like, if I was judging something 1 out of 10, I would always pick 10. Why would I pick 1? That's terrible. That's... You have to be metal enough to understand the Ford Tube Screamer, 4 wah, 4 flanger, into an AC30. I almost made it through that.
The most metal. The most brutal metal you could ever imagine.
It's not gent. It's what?
It's the what? Anyway, shitty joke. Dude, I'm going to tell you right now, I love doing content online. I think it's hilarious. And I'm telling you, the best thing that I ever did, and we're going to get on a serious note to kind of wrap this up.
Oh,
I know, right? I'm sure it won't last very long.
That's what she said.
Dude, I don't have that. Well, never mind. Anyway, the best thing I ever did was I turned off my notifications and I check them once a day. That way, I get to enjoy my notifications for about 30 minutes and laugh about them, and then turn it right back off again.
I mean, for me, you can't send me any more hate than I already hate myself, so...
Fact.
Bring it. I love...
All...
I've only dealt with a couple negative comments, and to me... they're more fun than positive comments, because positive comments, it's like, you know, thanks, but it's kind of like when people say thank you for your service.
You're welcome.
And it's like, okay, thanks. I mean, I did nothing.
You know what I did one time and it freaked a lady out? I said, you're welcome for my service.
One quick story time. One of my favorites was, when I was in AIT, and we had to pull staff duty all the time, obviously. But because we weren't allowed to go anywhere because of COVID, we were just literally stuck at the barracks the entire 26 and a half weeks. Woohoo.
Yeah.
Anyways, but there was a guy, his name was Barons. Remember him still to this day.
There's
but
always was, a Barons.
But he was sitting, at CQ, and the staff duty sergeant was there, one of the schoolhouse sergeants. And this guy from Domino's comes in, and he apparently is an NCO at a different company, but he works Domino's part-time.
Oh, contrary to popular belief, you don't make shit in the Army, so I believe that.
I can believe it too, but it was hilarious nonetheless. But he came in, and he was like, there are AIT soldiers eating Chinese food behind the Domino's. I'm not going to stand for this.
Has he delivered
it? And Baron stands up and he says, unless you're coming in here to thank me for my service, why don't you just go fuck yourself? And the staff sergeant just went, got a point.
Fact.
I was like, I'm just walking by and I was just like, oh my God. Just kept walking because I was like, nope, I'm out.
Well, and I agree 100%. Like, don't get me wrong. I appreciate anything. I appreciate any comment, to be honest with you, because what that's going to do is it's going to help that video, that piece, whatever piece of content, do better. Yeah. I greatly appreciate that I have people that are interacting with anything that I decide to put out, because in the sea of social media, especially musicians, and then guitar players, millions. And the fact that you commented on my video, I sincerely appreciate whatever.
Oh, for sure.
You know, but I do agree. When I get a comment that's like, "Oh, dude, that sounds great," it's like, "Thanks," but I don't know what to do with that. You know, it's like, "Cool, thank you." That's about all you can. But then when you get my favorite. Well, actually, when I see "well, actually," dude, I can't wait. My heart gets racing. I can't wait to read the rest of the comment. Because I know it's just like, I know that the only reason why people put hateful comments online are because there's something going on in their life that they're not happy with. It's nothing to do with you. You're just the outlet for that. You know, you're the outlet for that middle-aged guy that hates his job and his wife doesn't like him anymore. Like, I'm not trying to be mean or anything. I'm just speaking very generally. Well,
it's because we look so cute in that video.
Very true.
The cuter you are, the more hateful comments you get.
Especially if you're not a cute female.
Yeah.
You know, if you're a cute guy, man, all the other guys are gunning for you.
That's actually one of the sad things of guitar players or just being a musician in general. I've had more dudes tell me that they would suck my dick than I had any female ever. It's like 150 to maybe one if she was actually talking to me.
Well, and so that's the thing, you know, like you always hear the, you know, stories about the rock stars, right? Get all the girls, guitar players, get all the girls. At some point, yeah, when you're a teenager with an acne issue and you're playing acoustic guitar, absolutely not. When you're at a local band level and you open up for another local band, nope. But you're going to go back, you know, to like a little green area or staging area or wherever they have back behind whatever venue they got, or just to the bar itself.
Yeah.
And the other band members are going to be like, oh, dude. Yeah, that's the most meaningful interaction you're going to have is with the other bands that you're playing with. You know what I mean?
Well, actually, I enjoy that more anyways.
I do too.
It's because you're all... People try to get competitive
yeah.
for some reason, yeah. and I don't really get it, because why is, like, you're not running across anyone's playlist that only has one band forever.
Yeah.
You know, unless you're in your 50s and you ride a Harley, then it's probably just Metallica. But, shots fired. Anyways, but, you know, it's not necessary to get competitive, because everyone has a multitude of artists on their playlist.
Yeah.
And it's not taking away from your success for someone else to be successful.
Yep.
And especially those relationships that you can form with other people, you might end up in their band. Y'all might start a new band. It might be that they hit it off, and whenever they come to town, they seek you out to open for them, to get more eyes on your product. And it goes opposite way. The more you help in the vast community of being a musician of whatever genre you do, is never gonna be a bad thing.
No, you should always. Okay, this is kind of the way that I've thought about it. If I play with a band that, like, if I were to open up for somebody and that band just kills it, I'm going to be envious. And when I say envious, I don't mean it in the traditional sense of what people think in a bad way, because that envy is going to drive me to do better and try to emulate those tricks and stuff that I saw that they did. I'm not going to be jealous, though, because now jealous has an intent behind it. You know, I'm comparing myself to them. And what's that phrase? Comparison's a thief of joy, right? You don't ever want to do that. Being envious and causing that to drive you to do better, that's fine.
Yeah.
But the jealous thing or the competitive thing, it's like...
I've never gotten it. I don't like to engage with that, because it's not true to form for what I believe. And what I believe is... And you don't have to believe what I believe, obviously. I mean, everyone's their own person. But...
Everyone will believe what Mike is about to say.
Hoo-ah. Anyways, other than that nastiness... Anytime someone is successful, it lays a groundwork that you can possibly pattern your success from.
Fact.
You don't have to be the same. You don't have to be the same anything. But, hey, we went to this guy. This guy helped us out. Or we got someone to listen to our stuff, and he pointed out that, you know, it's a little muddy here and here, and, you know, there's things that we should do to help make it better. Collaboration and constructive criticism is never going to be a bad thing.
Nope.
What makes it bad is when you decide that your way is the only way, and that is the only way that can ever be done.
You, and that constructive criticism piece, and we've talked about it before, but taking it personally, it's not a personal attack.
It's not a personal attack on you as a person. It is a subjective statement about whatever thing it was.
From another individual's opinion.
Yes.
And you can take that opinion for what it's worth.
Yeah, you don't have to take every single bit of criticism and change everything that you ever do, because the more that you try to please everyone means that no one's going to end up liking it. Because, yep. And you see it through all types of media. The more that they try to be pleasing to everyone, especially like movies are most the worst about this, in my opinion. Because the more that they change a movie, you already know the beginning, middle, and end before you've even watched the movie. If I put on an Adam Sandler movie, you already know it's going to be dorky humor. There's going to be some conflict. It's going to get resolved at the last second, and everyone's going to be fine. Like, whoop-de-frickin'. Like, you already know. If I already know the beginning, the middle, the end, then why am I consuming this?
Yeah.
And if your music ends up being, oh, this is the verse, this is the chorus, then there's going to be a verse, there's going to be a chorus, there's going to be a bridge, and then a final chorus with a solo out. If that's every single song, Avenged Sevenfold, if that's every song, then don't be surprised when people start feeling that you're getting complacent with doing the same thing and expecting it. You're doing the same concept a little bit differently voiced and expecting something new. And I was like, you know, calling them out, like Avenged Sevenfold, for example, they are very talented musicians, but they have become the most bland, like everything sounds the same to me. Like that entire new album, quote unquote, it might as well have just been one long song. And it's like they changed things up, but at the same time, it's like they got success off of one song off of their self-titled album. I mean, they were successful before that, but they saw an interest in like Little Piece of Heaven.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which was just a dorky song, but they've started using those more like whimsical, dark, like medieval type age type breakdowns, and the stage was the perfect example. To me, the stage was like, okay, I know what y'all are gonna start pushing out constantly.
Right.
And it's like, it's cool for what it is, but it's just not for me. And I think that they're trying to find a sound that doesn't work, that is meant to engage everyone, but it doesn't engage anyone anymore.
Well, and you know, I have to bring this to an even smaller level. When I first started thinking about doing YouTube, I was trying to emulate people that I watched on YouTube. It lasted all of about 2 months because I just wasn't happy doing it. Because if I'm not, like you just said, if you're not being original and authentic to what you want to do, it's going to feel like a shit ton of work that you don't want to do.
Not only going to feel like a bunch of work, but it's also going to feel like a bunch of busy work.
Right.
To the point that you're trying to create something based off of other people's ideas. Instead of doing what you want to do, you're trying to find the algorithm.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, and I get why YouTube went to that. I do.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I don't understand, because unless you have something new that gets picked up and is just slammed out through the gate as looky here, it's like, congratulations, you had one video that hit 10 million views. Your next video got 25,000.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's because you took a week off. Like, well, that, in listening to YouTubers that talk about the fact that they have to plan, they have to have like 6, 7, 8 videos planned during the time that they actually take time off. So you have to do a whole bunch of work so you can relax for 2 weeks and worry about your stats.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound enjoyable to me.
Well, and the way I've always kind of looked at it too is, you know, you don't want anybody else controlling, you know, you don't want a third party controlling it. You know what I mean? Like the YouTube's, you know, any social media is great as a business card. And yeah, can you make some money off of YouTube? Sure. Can you make a sustainable thing off of YouTube now? Probably not.
I think it would just depend, but it also, you know, it depends on how much money you need versus how much money you're willing to take the risk of making.
Well, that's true. But what I'm saying is if you build up a loyal fan base through these companies like YouTube, through Instagram, through TikTok, through whatever, you build up that loyal fan base. And what is that 10,000 fan or 10,000 or 100 true or 1,000 true fans or whatever? I can't remember what it is. But pretty much if you get them to give you like a dollar amount, those 1,000 people through like a Patreon service or something like that, you can have a sustainable income just off of those 1,000 true fans. Right. Now, and that's a very general way to think about it. But that's what I'm saying is you come up with something, for instance, that's not a third party like YouTube controlling whether that, you know, your channel or TikTok where you have no idea where how, like, that's the biggest problem I have with TikTok is I see, okay, I post a video, it has X amount of views. It gives me no analytics on how long it was viewed, how it was, it could have been a second where they were just flipping through. You know what I mean? Yeah. I have no clue. But if you have something tangible, like a Patreon service, like a podcast or something else where you offer a service where you're in control of it, it's your business at that point. That's the best way to do it, in my opinion. The bad thing is it just takes time to build up.
Well, of course. And I mean, and no matter what you did, it's going to take time. I mean, it's like the old, what Mr. Beast said. It's like he did 1,000 videos and it wasn't until after that 1,000 videos that he saw anything.
No, 100%.
And it's like, you know, you have to, I was like, the thing with doing social media, especially unless you just strike gold, you have to be comfortable with no success. Absolutely. You have to be comfortable with a lack of visibility for whatever you're doing.
Yeah, when you think about if you're gonna like okay, so for instance, if anybody listening is thinking about starting a podcast, thinking about starting a YouTube channel, thinking about anything creative in that field, if you are doing it to make money eventually down the road, you're not gonna make money eventually down the road.
Well, I mean, for me, I think if this was, like, if I was doing this on my own, right, and I was trying to get this off the ground, I would be so lost in trying to get any of this done, because to not have something tangible that you're actually, like, you're not sending a shirt, you're not sending a pick, you're not sending strings, a guitar, an amp, whatever, you know, you're not sending something tangible. And that's like the only reason why, as much as Patreon and stuff like that is cool and I get it, I also don't like it as much because I think that everything is becoming a subscription.
Fair.
All these video services, all the gaming services, all like every single service in your life now seems like it has a subscription tied to it. You want to use this new banking app? Well, that's going to be $16.99 a month.
Right.
And it's like, you know, you want to play this game with no ads? That's $3.99. Like everything has a subscription now. Mm-hmm. And it's like you don't own it. Like you're not selling CDs of this podcast. You know what I mean?
I might.
Oh, no, we need to send... If we're doing anything, it's 8 tracks, all right?
Okay, cool.
Yeah, uncompressed.
Or vinyl, that's even more expensive.
Yeah. Oh, my God. We'll send you your own record player, too.
For a measly $100 a month, you can get a vinyl of this exact episode of this podcast. No, absolutely not.
And we'll sell you the $25 Team U vinyl player.
Yeah.
For $1,000.
The $25 one might be cheaping on them. Okay, let's go for the $51.
Yeah, you know, and we'll sign it to make it authentic.
Authentic. You're going to play
we'll
records.
We'll write "Man the Helm" in Sharpie on the side of it.
And I'm a lefty too, so it's going to be very crude.
The only bad thing is you're going to get a plug that does not go in any Western outlet.
Fact. So I hope you guys have the adapter for that.
Yeah, we'll sell the adapter too, but it's an additional $49.99 subscription. Yeah.
Well, so that's the thing. Like, I've thought about doing shirts and stuff like that, but the problem is it's just like it's such an initial upfront cost. You know, I'll tell you what, there are a decent amount of people that do listen to this podcast. I do have a comment section down below on all of these podcast episodes. If you're listening to this and you would like a shirt to possibly be made in the future, most likely Toes Down Best website, or maybe an actual Man the Helm logo. We'll see.
We should just send have a picture of an H-string with two capos on it.
Toes Down Best website?
Yeah.
Just no sense whatsoever. I am so down for that. That's a killer t-shirt. But I think that's probably going to do it good for this week. But yeah, let us know down below in the show notes. Right below that will be the comment section for anywhere you stream this podcast. If shirts are something you guys would be interested in, we can maybe kind of get the ball rolling on that. I'm definitely making a Toes Down Best website.
Only feet, Toes Down Best website.
But typical logos too. Well, we'll see what we can do. But anyway, that'll wrap it up for this week. So we'll check you guys next week on Man the Helm Podcast.